You're listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio.
Hello and welcome to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. I'm going to be your host today. My name is Dan Dimite, and I'm joined here in studio with Brad Pieron.
Yes, sir.
And Aaron Richards. What is up, brothers? You excited for today?
Feeling good.
Oh, it's so good. Hey, if you're joining us for the first time, this is the podcast where we engage in critical questions that you, our audience, ask. And then we spin these questions to talk about how we can also go on mission. So what we're going to do is we're going to throw a question out. We're going to give our 2 cents on the answer to that question. And then we're going to close with a mission momentum, how we can take that question and those answers into the momentum of our week to live a life on mission. Hey, you guys feeling like missionaries today?
Feeling pretty missionary. Aaron, you?
That's the dumbest question ever. How do you feel missionary? Well, I woke up feeling missionary today.
Close your eyes and ask yourself, am I feeling missionary today? And see what the response is.
Hey, Jack. Hey, Jack. How's that question coming?
The other question. Wait, what? Yeah. No, wait.
I thought that was the question.
That was. Are you feeling missionary today? That's today's question. No, Jack, could you please enlighten us with the wisdom of our audience and give us a great question?
How do I live in the tensions of my desires and God's will?
Oh, that's a good one. So how do I live in the tensions of my desires and God's will? Dun, dun, dun. Okay.
I think I'll take the first step. Oh, did I make both of those? That's left-handed. That's a finger roll too. So 2 cents are now in the mission jar. I love this question. I think if, well, any of us who have like lived a life that's oriented towards the Lord realize that there are times in our life where we find desires that might not be aligning with what we've been instructed or God's desires. And I was really impacted early in my conversion in reading a book by Dr. Ralph Martin called The Fulfillment of All Desire. And amongst other things, the book just points to the fact that God is ultimately the fulfillment of all the desires of our hearts, even the ones that are misaligned at first, right? Mm-hmm. And so I guess when I hear this question, if I were asking it, I think a tension I might have is like, okay, so I'm seeing these desires I have and I'm pursuing them, and I'm not sure if ultimately God is the author of those desires. Well, what we can be sure of is God is the author of whatever is under all of our desires, because what's under all of our desires is God. And I think in our Christian experience, sometimes we, in fear of sin, will teach people that we need to just do away with desire, right? So, hey, abdicate all desire, set it to the side, and just pursue the intellectual life and relationship with God that understands he's the way and the truth and the life. But in Dr. Martin's book, I love that he points to the fact that no, go deeper into that desire. The surface level desire might be the thing that you're thinking is not in alignment with the Lord, but he is under it. So keep pressing. So if you're finding yourself drawn to something that you don't want to be drawn to, ask why you're drawn to it. Find what the impetus is for you pursuing that. And ultimately, if you go deep enough, the answer to that's going to be God. So I would answer this of, well, I guess I would answer the question specifically. So how do I live in the tension, like between my desires and God's will? I would say recognizing that God's will is for you to find the depth of those desires. So the way to live in the tension is to press deeper, not to rid yourself of them when at surface level, they don't look in alignment with God.
I love that. Aaron, what do you think about Brad's 2 cents?
I think that's awesome. As I hear this question, I'm having a hard time even just taking this outside of my own personal context, right? Mm-hmm. You have to remind yourself of that. I have to remind myself of that, that I'm stuck in this moment right now where I am struggling because my reality, my expectation for what God promises isn't lining up with the reality of the moment and what I desire from it. And we need to realize that my desire rightly oriented actually does align with God. Mm-hmm. So if there's a misalignment, something's got to change and that thing has to be me. And that's just a great invitation to remind ourselves of that.
I think sometimes in prayer, we can, we can think our bad desires shouldn't be talked, like we shouldn't bring those to God. And I think it's so beautiful when we bring, like, the subject of prayer is our thoughts, feelings, and desires. And so even if my desire is something disordered, right? Like if I desire,
that's great, Dan.
So like I can actually bring that disordered desire to God and say, God, what, why do I have this? And it's exactly, then God, he starts speaking to us in that disordered desire. And he says, you have this, like, because you want this. And then because you want this, and because you want this. And as you're saying, Brad, the end of that questioning with God is always going to be clarity. And it's at the end of that questioning, it's actually where the power and the healing is, right? Yep. That and God doesn't, I think sometimes we think of God's will as this like external thing I have to do. Like Paul says to Thessalonians, this is God's will, your holiness. Like God just wants you. He wants a relationship with you. So like what all of these desires that you have, he like the end is just so that you talk to God about right. them. And so right. that you can have union with him and relationship with him. And so whether that you think they're good, whether other people think they're good, like what they are there. Now bring them to him and have a conversation.
Yeah. And if you press like into them enough, the ones that at least I hear all the time when I'm walking with people is if you're pressing deep enough, you're going to find, I desire a relationship.
Yeah.
I desire greatness. I desire something to do with my life that matters more than the moment. Like there's a pretty consistent like series of deep desires. And once we get there, we recognize that the path.
Yeah.
Tall.
I got some 2 cents here.
Oh, shots. Oh, that was so close.
No, not no, today. Not hey, today. You didn't make them.
It's going to be worth it. Just wait. Okay. So this.
I like what Jack leaves at it. The laughter from outside the shot.
There will be a day where I make everyone.
I'm keeping a tally of how many times we can make Jack laugh on the show. I've got 2 so far, just FYI.
I have probably 0.
That's 3. I'm working. 300. This summer I had the opportunity to give a teaching on God's will at summer camp. And it's funny when we talk about God's will, because it's like this big mysterious thought that we think about. And the reality is God communicates his will to us very clearly. In one particular place is in the teaching of the Lord's Prayer, the Our Father, that we ought to pray, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, that God's kingdom would come and that his will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. So God's will, as he expresses it to us, is that earth would become like heaven. And sort of to get to where you were going, Brad, that our desires ought to be oriented to a heavenly reality. And each of us can kind of imagine what we believe heaven is like. But when I'm asking, like, how does my desire for this thing fit into God's will? The answer can be, well, what does that thing look like oriented toward heaven? Right? When I think about my finances and the anxiety I have for my finances, my will is that, you know, I'll do something extreme that may never happen, right? My will is that I would be a millionaire missionary, right? God, what are my finances look like in heaven? I'm not going to be poor, but I'm not going to be attached, right? There's going to be a reality that I've got my, I was praying about this a number of days ago that. When I think about my experience in heaven, like that I'm overcome with a joy and a peace and a satisfaction of realizing that I can rest confidently in God, that my relationships are going to be oriented toward God. And I think the fruit of that, when we adopt that perspective, is that tension between my desires and God's will begins to diminish as I let go of those things that I'm attached to. And I think that perspective toward detachment in life, it's a really healthy thing.
Yeah, I like that perspective a lot, because I think that one of the shames of the generation that we're in is we've lost how amazing heaven is. Like we've like made heaven boring. And I think that like if heaven's the end of what we're made for, like what is it? It's God's will perfected. Right? Like it's us fully alive. It's us fully engaged with the one who created us. And sometimes when we talk about heaven, it's just kind of like, well, it's where good people go and you just kind of exist there forever, you know? And it's life here perfected. And we don't even know how to comprehend that. We don't know how to understand worship and orientation to God the way that it'll be in heaven, but pushing towards that heavenly reality now, like what can we engage in right now that would be as adventurous as heaven could be? I just think we have to start reshaping just what people think of when they think heaven. It's not Casper the Friendly Ghost floating around for all of eternity.
That's actually all I've been thinking heaven was. What? Can we talk after the show to make sure we're real?
You're the exact one I was thinking about. I was like, Dan has made heaven boring.
I just keep praying. I can't
boring.
Wait to be Casper. Yeah.
Dan's like, I cannot wait to sit down and just be there for all of eternity.
I always like the guys, the really fat ghost in Casper that was able to eat a whole bunch.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
Yeah, that's what I
was thinking Ghostbusters.
Oh, that was
Ghostbusters. That Ghostbusters? Yeah, I was like, that's not Casper. But when we
diminish heaven and the glory of heaven, the result is we elevate the earth.
Exactly.
So like we're like, oh, heaven's not that great, and because heaven's not that great, well, I need to live everything now.
Yeah.
And we start panicking.
Our earthly desires take precedence instead of our heavenly ones.
And so then our earthly desires, I think, become so big and so urgent, and they almost start to become Lord as opposed to Jesus being Lord. And I think what you're saying, Aaron, is so profound, is that sometimes these desires, like I'm like, oh my gosh, God doesn't want this for me. And like we start thinking about his will intention or at war with our desires. But like Brad, you were saying, no, just go deeper into those. I think Aaron, you're saying go wider. So like when you go deeper, you find relationship with God. When you go wider, you realize your desires are a little fickle. You know, like sometimes like our desires are just they're carnal, they're fleshy. Like you really just want things that are fading. And even if they're good desires, like even if it's like, man, I really want this relationship to work out. Do you realize that relationship has an end date, right? Like that everything, in view of the grandeur of God, the things that we desire in life are pretty small and insignificant. It's all rubbish, if you will, as Paul says. And so I think that's awesome. I love that. All right, my two cents. Woo, woo. All right. Okay, what do I want to say? I think God loves your desires. Like whoever's asking this question, like he planted those desires in you and he's fascinated by them. I think if we think about the God, the Father, as a father who loves his children and looks at his children with fascination, my kids, like they're each different. And I'm fascinated by the things that they're passionate about, right? Like my two youngest daughters, they are just like arts and crafts, and like they're always just building and creating, and it's just beautiful. And when I see those desires in them, I want to magnify those desires, so I want to pull them out. So God, I think, you know, God doesn't want to destroy your desires. He's fascinated by them. He loves them. And when he sees them, he sees his image and likeness, his own image and likeness manifested in and through you. So I think we can look at what God wants to do with our desires when they seem at war with or in tension with his will for your life is he wants to transform them and do something even more beautiful. So you see Peter and James and John and Andrew, the Lord has called, when he called them to himself, he said, no longer will you be fishermen, but fishers of men. And they no longer stopped. Like, it wasn't like, hey, what you were doing, you're just never going to do anymore. Like, my will is that you're just not happy because I know you love the sea. No, like that you still see their whole life is around the sea, that throughout their following of him, he brings them back. The invitation with Peter of his call, he was brought back at the after the resurrection, back on the water, that God has these things in your life that he wants to transform. No longer will you be fishermen. Okay, so it may not be exactly what you thought, but you're going to be fishers of men. I'm going to transform it. And so when you have a desire that is opposed to God's will, my suggestion would be you put it on the altar. And you, whatever hits the altar of God gets transformed. So bread and wine becomes body and blood, right? If I put my desire on the altar, like, God, I really want this. And I don't know, it doesn't seem like you want this for me. I'm going to offer it up. Like Abraham offering Isaac. It's that act of offering that allows the desire to be transformed into God's will. And so the two may not be opposed. They may be together. And I think this question too, I think a lot of times the desire may be like for healing, right? Like, my mom is dying of cancer and I desire that she be healed from cancer, but that my mom's not actually dying from cancer. This is an analogy. I desire that she be healed, right? But it may be God's will that she not be healed in this earth, right? And so if I lay that desire on the altar, then God's able to transform us. So I start seeing healing from heaven's perspective, right? And I love what Paul says to the Romans, right? He roots us in the Father and he says, "For you did not receive a spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you received a spirit of adoption through which we all cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. If only we suffer with him so that we may also be glorified with him." So the beautiful thing about Christianity is suffering is transformed into resurrection. Suffering is transformed into glory. So no matter how bad God's will may look, like it may be God's will that the cancer isn't healed and that your mother passes. But the beauty of the gospel is that that suffering is transformed into resurrection. And only in Christianity do we find that kind of beauty. So wherever there's tension between God's will and your desires, I think just ask God, how do you want to transform this so that I see it like you see it?
Mm-hmm. I think the bridge there is trust, right? I think sometimes when we find ourselves in a tension between our desires and God's will, what we'll presume is that he might have desires that are antithetical to mine. Like they're like,
he doesn't want what's good for me.
He doesn't want what's good for me. Yeah. Exactly. And I was thinking about your analogy with the altar, which I think is awesome because I actually go to that whenever I'm walking with someone in discernment. I'll use the altar image a lot because on the altar, one of two things happens. The altar, it's either burnt up or it's multiplied, right? It's burnt up or it's multiplied. We can see that even in like the candles and the Eucharist. You can see it in the Old Testament too. Like that's what's happening on altars, and both are pleasing to God because there's an offering. An offering's made, and what happens to the offering, we can entrust to God. And whatever happens of it will be pleasing to him and will be for our betterment. Mm-hmm. That offering, for me to be detached from it, if it goes away or goes into something different, I can trust that God is in it for my flourishing, so that's okay. Yeah. If it multiplies, and you can like imagine like if you're listening and you're discerning vocation or something, imagine that in the same light, right? I'm in this relationship, and I'm not sure if I'm supposed to, well, put it on the altar. Like, ooh. How are you experiencing it with the Lord? Is he drawing you further in, multiplying it? Is he pulling you back a little bit? Okay. Well, we can make decisions on that because we can trust that he's in it for our flourishing, you know?
Amen.
Beautiful.
Got anything, Aaron?
I'm ready and raring. Ready. For some mission momentum.
Momentum.
Can I throw one thing before we go there?
No. You've already given two cents. You've given two. It's not called three cents.
I know,
Brad.
But I'm going to pull one out.
You're going to tell the one that Aaron didn't make.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, great. Yeah, that's fine. I was thinking about the concept of desire as well. And I think that we have allowed ourselves to define God's desires from ours instead of ours from his too. Like take the perspective of like, what does God desire for my life? Lord, help shape my desires to match that. I think a lot of times in our Christian walk, we can just be like, I really hope God has the same desires I have. I really hope his heart is the same as mine. And if we make that prayer instead, God, give me your heart for me and for those around me, help my desires be yours. Like it, we'll find more success in that prayer than, God, I really hope your desires are mine. Make mine yours instead of like, make yours mine.
That's super good. That was definitely a new 2 cents, but it was a good 2 cents. If you're angry and bitter at Brad for adding an additional 2 cents,
I think they're excited. Put some comments if you're like, this edified my whole life and Dan needs to allow it to happen more. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, it's conformity. I mean, it's not about conformity with the will of God. It's about uniformity with the will of God, which is beautiful. Okay, mission momentum. Who wants to share their mission momentum? How you're going to take this question into your week on mission this
good. Yeah,
week.
Let me jump on it. So our creative team here at Damascus, we're reading a book called The Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. Mm. And it is it's an incredible dive into what can happen when I orient my life around uniforming my will to God's will. And the beautiful way that Brother Lawrence identifies like the key to this happening is just orienting ourselves from a standpoint of, God, my my reason for doing what I'm doing today is out of love of you. That my love for you would actually motivate my activity. Mm-hmm. So my mission, my challenge for us for Mission Momentum today, for this week, is to pause your day anytime you can bring this to your mind and ask myself, okay, why am I doing this next thing? Why am I going to make this phone call? Why am I stepping into this meeting? Lord, I'm stepping into this meeting because I love you. Lord, I'm entering into this phone call because I love you. I've tried to incorporate this into my own leadership here at Damascus, that sometimes we have opportunity to open our meetings in prayer. I always like to begin our meetings in prayer that Jesus, we love you. Mm-hmm. That this is the rooting statement. And if we can foster that consistent motivation of love of God, that all of a sudden those things that would draw us to love my own things, to love my own desires, to love the things of this world, will begin to fade.
That's so good.
It is good.
There you have it.
There you have it from Aaron Richards himself.
My mission momentum is going to just orient around this idea of desire. So with the desires that we have, I would encourage all of us included, this week, permitted that it's not sinful, right? If there's a desire that you find on your heart, I want to like encourage us to engage that desire and welcome God into it. Because I think sometimes we can even find them to be foolish. It's like, I desire ice cream today. It's like, okay, eat ice cream and celebrate with the Lord. Like, I just think sometimes we can see how interested he is in the things on our heart when we welcome him into these little desires that we have. So this week, a desire that you'd usually question or ask if it was too childish or if it was really necessary, actually engage it this week and welcome God to it. Into it while engaging it. And I'm interested to see just the fruit that comes from recognizing he's actually interested in the things that I'm partaking in right now, no matter how small.
That's great, Brad.
That's good. Okay. Mine's going to require you to talk to someone and do something in a missionary way. So there's always people we know, whether it's a family member, whether it's a coworker, a classmate, who they have impure desires. Mm-hmm. Their desires are disordered. And we see that, and we can either get frustrated with it or kind of annoyed by it. I would suggest going off of your two cents, your first mm-hmm. two cents, Brad, that the end of all of those desires is God, that you would ask God to reveal to you what that person is truly desiring through their disorder. And so like, if it's, you know, if they're in a impure relationship or whatever, what are they actually desiring? Maybe they're desiring authentic love. And whatever, pick the person, mm-hmm. ask God to show what is their deepest desire, God, behind this action. And then talk to them about that deepest desire, right? And they may not even know that it's there, but actually have a conversation with them in some way about that desire that maybe they haven't seen or heard God speak into. I think that'd be really awesome to change someone's life.
And I like it.
I think we want to live a life that changes lives. We want to help people be blessed. Mm-hmm. And so that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. That brings us to the end. We just want to remind you that you've been listening to Beyond Damascus because you may have forgotten. So that's why.
At some point that's through why Brad's multiple you. Rounds of two cents. Yeah.
So this is the show where encounter meets mission. Honestly, I think this question was a great question. A lot of people wrestle with this. And so if this has blessed you, or if you know people that wrestle with this question, go ahead and share this episode with them. That in and of itself is a missionary activity. So share this. This show is also a show on mission. And if you subscribe to Beyond Damascus, we have a mission partner who will give us $10 towards a camp scholarship for every new subscription this season. So you hitting... allows us to send kids to Catholic Youth Summer Camp, which is a beautiful opportunity. Mm-hmm. So like, subscribe, share, do all that fun stuff to help us evangelize. And we want to close every episode by reminding you that
mission makes sense. That's right.
That's so fun.
Get it?
Okay.
Mission sense.
Yeah, it's we're good. Doing it. We're doing it big. Thank you so much for loving the Lord and sharing the good news of the gospel. Join us next week on Beyond Damascus.
You're listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio. You can listen to the whole version of today's episode on www.ewtn.com/radio/podcasts.
or check us out on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. We will be right back after a short commercial break.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
I love you. I think you're amazing. I wish you were my neighbor. I live in a beautiful cul-de-sac. We would have so much fun. Oh,
I'm a listener to you guys for the longest time. You guys help me and help, I'm sure, everybody so much.
Thank you for everything that you guys do. We absolutely love your show and we try not to miss it. So thank you so much.
Everyone has a story to tell. And Take Two is about giving folks a safe platform for them to share their lived experiences so people can learn and grow together.
I have a saying on the show, I love the wreckage that is me. We share our own past, our wounds, our happiness, our joys, our sadness, our trials, our challenges, and people relate to that.
In my humble opinion, it's the mystical body of Christ in action, and it works.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, weekdays at noon Eastern on EWTN Radio.
We need to pray because God says to pray. We don't need to pray to change God's mind. We pray because that is our big connection to the Almighty. Do we need it? Like we need air? Like we need water? Yep. Because if, in fact, God is the ultimate reality, more reality than air and water, then we do need to pray as much as we need to breathe.
EWTN is everywhere. EWTN radio programming is provided free of charge to over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio stations. It's a great teaching tool for Catholics and non-Catholics alike. For a complete list of EWTN AM and FM stations across America, visit EWTNradio.net. At the bottom of the page, click Affiliates. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Welcome back to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio. All right, and welcome back to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Friends, I am hosting today's show. My name is Aaron Richards. I'm joined here in the illustrious Damascus Media Studio by my friends and brothers in Christ, Dan Demite, Brad Pierre.
Good to see you, brother.
Jack behind the computer today. Welcome, brother, to the show.
You're looking good, Jack. Look at that beanie. Yeah,
friends, man. Beyond Damascus is the show where encounter meets mission. And as you know, kind of the format for today's show is that we will be responding to critical questions that you, our viewers and listeners, have posed to us in the comments or through email. And we're going to give our two cents on how we think the Lord would lead us to answer those questions for the church. And then we'll wrap it all up with charging you, our audience, for mission through a segment called Mission Momentum. And we are a show that is on mission. We work here at a beautiful campus in Centerburg, Ohio. Our flagship program here at Damascus is called Catholic Youth Summer Camp. We have an amazing benefactor who has agreed to sponsor, to the tune of $10 per subscription, a camper for Catholic Youth Summer Camp, or hopefully multiple campers for Catholic Youth Summer Camp, for everybody who subscribes for the show this season. So please subscribe, click the button, and share it with your million or your closest friends so we can
have as many campers as possible.
$10 million of camp scholarships.
That guy's like, I didn't expect you guys to be that good.
Jack, throw us a question, brother.
The question for today is, how do I find joy and excitement in the reverent and intellectual parts of my faith?
Mm-hmm.
How do I find joy and excitement in the reverent and intellectual parts of my faith?
Intellectual. Mm-hmm.
Good. I think I want to take a first stab at this.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Okay. Two for two. Just to the right. Dang. Overcompensation.
Okay, you know what? We're good. We're good.
I still feel good. I used compensation. Sorry.
I still feel good. I have five kids at home, and one of the joys of my life is teaching my kids how to clean their rooms, right? And I only had to be asked once when I was a child to clean up my toys, and then I did it diligently for the rest of my life. But my children are not the same. And here's the thing. How do I find joy in something that I know is good, but that doesn't necessarily align
to the joyful parts of my heart, I do it with intention. Okay. So that would be my response to the listener who posed this one. How do I find joy in those reverent and intellectual parts of my faith? It would be to pursue them with active intention. So to actually enter in. We have a saying here at Damascus that joy is a choice, right? That I have to choose actively to engage in the process of being joyful. And that choice for joy oftentimes comes from a place of intentional commitment. So if I have been accidentally experiencing the reverent parts of our faith, or if I've been, you know, accidentally dragged along through homilies or sermons or podcasts into the intellectual portions of my faith, I believe that you could probably find a deeper experience of joy if you were to approach those with real intention.
Aaron, can you elaborate on a non-church example of how you've found joy and excitement when you've approached something with intention? Because I see this in your life all the time. I'm just wondering, like, it's so abstract with the religion. How have you done it in your family with your kids?
Well, I mean, I use the example of my kids cleaning their bedrooms. And I would say that, in making discipline a game, I think that's the way to cultivate joy. So one example here at Damascus, I used to get really anxious about the fact that there was clutter and trash all around our campus. So
you make us sound pretty bad. There's not. So Aaron
he's meticulous.
If there's a crumb on the table, would consider that as clutter and trash all over.
He's very orderly. He's very orderly. So,
I am too. To his it is by so definition. This is a beautiful campus that we steward well.
because of the success of this mission. No. So I make it a game. I make it intentional, and I charged our missionaries and actually built it into part of our culture that I would, throughout the course of my day, I would pick up trash and put it in my pocket because there wasn't a trash can immediately next to me. So we created a game here at Damascus where the challenge is that your pocket should be full of trash, right? It's awkward, it's strange, but the net result is that now I'm doing that intentionally. It's now something that actually brings me joy to be able to engage. You know, I see missionaries are hanging out on a one-on-one and there's a piece of trash as they're walking forward. And I see them like race to grab it because now we know that like, hey, that decision's already been made. It's mm-hmm. already something I know I'm going to engage in. Let's do it joyfully.
Yeah. That's a great example because no one really wants to pick up trash, right? There's something dirty about that. And yet it is enjoyable. And because I've set my heart to do that, when I pick up the trash, I actually feel enjoyment. I'm like, wow, this is like, I'm doing well. Aaron would be so proud of me.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you.
Well, no, I actually, it's funny because I was just at a conference in Florida and I was going into like just a quick pit stop at a gas station. I was going into the bathroom and the bathroom had just like paper towels everywhere. And in my head, I'm thinking like, I cannot leave this bathroom yeah. until the paper towels are thrown away because it's been so ingrained in me. So I honor
you're welcome, Brad.
That culture at Damascus, you know?
Yeah. So you entered into the toilet cross plunging. To pick up the toilet yeah, paper yeah, yeah. and in that you experienced the resurrection of a beautiful trash.
No, this is a good bathroom. Analogy because of the joy set before you. So I think that is why you engage in hard things
yeah.
is because the joy of the goodness of the outcome, right? Like, so whenever I'm doing something, I think this happens in the life of virtue all the time. At first, it's not something I necessarily want to do, yep. but it's not about wanting to do it. It's about knowing that doing it is going to make me better, right? And engaging in that over time, you then get excited about the outcome of you getting better, becoming more excellent, becoming more saintly, yeah. holy, whatever the...
I love it. The joy set before you. Okay.
How about
my
that?
My 2 cents.
Was that two?
That was two.
Somehow
one time,
you
I know.
Keep them so tight that when it literally sounds like one every time.
Yeah, it's but that's the way I roll.
If you're listening to us and not watching, we throw pennies into a,
into a jar
for excitement. That's what I'm talking about.
We never
for any
that?
Kind of context.
Okay, so how do I find joy and excitement in the more reverent and intellectual parts of the faith? I'm gonna talk about Aaron Richards and our beautiful producer Jack Parker, and the two of them often engage in conversations about things that I think are very nerdy and stupid. Like, Pokemon.
That's what I was saying.
Stupid. I said I think. I did say they are objectively.
No,
so
there
wait,
was some pastoral buffering. You know,
yeah, and this is gonna. Yeah, you're gonna actually win at the end of the day. So they'll talk about things like Pokemon or video games or AI, and these are intellectual things that I am completely ignorant of. And so because of that, I'm like, ew, like, because, but truly, I mean, you two are super excited when you talk about these things. There's all this enjoyment that you're back and forth, you're laughing, and I'm just like, what are you talking about, right? Dragon Ball Z may be the one that
it's been
happens
a while.
The most.
It's been a while since you've had a DBZ date.
Oh, and, but ultimately, the reason I find no joy and excitement in the things that you do is because I'm ignorant of them. And so I'm sure if I invested time in them and I understood, I would find joy and excitement. And I have found that in my faith, the more I know, the more I love. Or that when I study something, when I discover something, I fall in love with it. And when you fall in love with something, whether that's Dragon Ball Z or your Catholic faith, it produces, the fruit of that is enthusiasm. It's joy. It's excitement. It's passion. However you want to refer to it. And in my own spiritual lives, I would say a couple times I've noticed this is one with the Scott Hahn's book, The Lamb's Supper. When I was young in my faith, I didn't find the Mass to be extremely enjoyable or exciting. But then I read the Lamb's Supper by Scott Hahn, and it just, I mean, it was like lights went off, and the Mass became something significantly different because now I understood it. It became heaven on earth. And and literally that was probably 18, 20 years ago that I read that. And still to this day, when I'm disengaging from Mass, I go back to the things I learned in that book, and it re-engages me. It brings the Mass alive again, week after week after week. And or intercessory prayer. I used to kind of like, I wasn't super excited about intercessory prayer. And we needed to, we were trying to heal a part of our culture here at Damascus that wasn't, there wasn't service like Ora et Labor, prayer and work. There wasn't a passion around an intercessory prayer. So I spent 9 months studying intercessory prayer because I wanted to infuse passion behind that in our culture. And it was in the studying of intercessory prayer that my heart just became enlivened by it. And now intercession is something I'm extremely excited about because I studied it and I learned it. And so the more we know, the more we love. And the more we love, the more joy we have. Mm-hmm. And so if there's parts of the faith that seem dry and boring to you, I would just dedicate time to studying it and see if that enlivens it for you.
Yeah. Well, by definition, like relationship is the knowledge of something, right? Like, no, like the deeper you are in relationship, the more you know about that thing. And so like, if the end that we're made for is relationship, the relationship I have with this intellectual part of the faith, like the more I know about it, that relationship is going to be not only like closer and more alive, but it's going to be manifesting fruit. Right? Because relationship that is most intimate produces most fruit, right? And so like it's as we go in there, it begins shining out from us. Like you can see it whenever it clicks for you that like, hey, picking up this trash, it's not simply obligatory, but it's an opportunity for me to step outside of myself. You can see that, you know? And yep. I think, I just think that when we live like that, we know that it's a better way of living. And why would that not be true of our faith? If that's going to be true of these tasks of everyday life and so on and so forth.
It's awesome.
What do you think about it?
I think Dan, you gotta brush up your cultural lingo there.
I know. Pokemon's like I listen, I'm sorry, Aaron.
Jack and I have not talked about Pokemon nor Dragon Ball Z in
Pokemon's dead and gone.
I can't keep up with you. What do you guys talk about now?
I mean
the Cosmere,
Stormlight, Brandon Sanderson, various AI implementations.
I have no idea the word that you just said. That sounds like a different language to me. What? The Cosmere?
The Cosmere? Yes.
Oh yeah, geez. Okay.
Brandon Sanderson. Do you what we should have him on the show, Jack.
Dan,
I would lose it.
But I appreciate this, and yet it brings me no joy because I am ignorant. And so if your faith doesn't bring you joy, perhaps
the cosmere will.
Well, maybe you're not in the relationship you should be within that faith. But a question on the you had mentioned a couple times in your two cents about becoming alive. Like the Mass wasn't like alive to me, and I became alive in the Mass after the Lamb's Supper. Intercession became alive for me. Like, what can you give context? What do you mean when you say like it became alive to me, or I was alive in it?
I find the word, if I could edit this question, sorry to whom asked it, I think the word excitement is a little bit a part of the consumeristic culture, that I need to be excited by something. I prefer the word enjoyable, that something is enjoyable and I can appreciate it, and in that it gives me life, right? And so am I excited at Mass? I don't think so, but is Mass intended to excite? Is the human person supposed to be excited all the time? I think our culture has led to that kind of mentality that you have to produce a 30-second clip that makes me excited, and then I'm going to go to a next 30-second clip that makes me. And so I think God wants us to enjoy life, and he wants, and in that enjoyment, I appreciate the things that God has given me in life.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's all right. Beautiful. Yeah, I have mine. My two cents is oriented around, just for those who are maybe asking this question from a place of like, I really appreciate the reverent and intellectual parts of the faith, but joy and excitement aren't something that I feel are flowing from me in the way I desire them to. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's say that. And I think if you're happy and you know it, show it, right? Like if you have found beauty in the reverence at Mass, if you found some of the intellectual parts of the faith true without a shadow of a doubt, right? Allow that to manifest in your life. Like, allow yourself to be excited by that. Like, when we talk about the show, we say that encounter leads to mission. When I have encountered a reverence that is otherworldly and I know it, let me help others be magnetized to that which is otherworldly. Like, people aren't magnetized to robotic gestures. Okay, so let's talk about just the reverent parts of the faith. The most reverent part of our faith is the beautiful liturgy that's been passed on to us, right? It's reverence perfected. Like, we're there with the choirs of angels and the saints. And yet, sometimes the people I find in my life that are most drawn and most appreciate that part of the faith, the reverence that's found in liturgy, they are least likely to operate in such a way that that's true. It's like whenever you go to that reverent part of like, reverence doesn't equal robotic. So like the reverent part, like the reverence of the Mass, there is a way by which we all are doing the same thing, but we shouldn't be doing it the same way, because Dan's there and Aaron's there and Brad's there. Like, and the way I'm engaging it, the way certain parts of the Mass stand out to me at different times, the way the Lord's speaking to me and drawing me and bringing me back to himself, like that should be manifesting in what I'm experiencing. Like, sometimes I think we've found that maybe in the pursuit of virtue, the best way to allow others to know that I'm pursuing that is to become stoic. And I don't think that's always the case. And so I think sometimes the reverent parts of the faith that we've fallen in love in, they're not taking on the dynamism, right? Like in 2 Timothy, we read that Paul says in the final days, a lot of things are going to happen. They're going to be wacky. One of the things is that people are going to be lovers of money, lovers of pleasure, not lovers of God. And at the very end, he like crescendos it with, they're going to take the form of religion, but deny its power, deny its dynamism. Like the dynamic aspect of it, like the part of it that's manifesting, yeah, right? Like, let's of course keep the form, and let's allow ourselves to be dynamic in it, to experience the dynamism of it, to live the power of it. And in the intellectual parts of the faith, I would say the same way, that we had an awesome episode on just, we were discussing a little bit around the transcendentals, like the true, the good, the beautiful. At least I was. I can't remember if that was a two cents or we've recorded enough at this point. But like, if you found that which is true, right? And then you can also see it in Jesus as the way, the truth, and the life. That might have been the context we were talking about it in the last episode. But if you found the truth, could I tell that you believe the truth by the way that you live? Like, I've thought about this before, and I'll leave my two cents here. But if
if I had a camera on me at all times, okay, let's just imagine like when I'm with myself, when it's just me and a friend, when it's just me and my spouse, when it's me and the missionaries at Damascus, when it's me on my ride home, if I had a camera on me at all times and I went up to someone on the street and they didn't know anything about me and all I did was hand them that tape and they watched the tape, would they, by watching the tape, know that I believe that Jesus rose from the dead? Or would they not? And how would they know that? And would they know that I'm living a life of holiness and mission, or would they not? And how would they know that?
Yeah.
Right? And because I want to live both. And you can see that, like, what would be the hallmarks of what you would look for in that video? Like, well, if Jesus is everything, then he's everything. If he's nothing, then it's nothing. So if I've claimed him to be everything, I would anticipate that person talking about Jesus some, talking to Jesus some, telling people how amazing it is when people are struggling, being a person that's in the midst of that. Like, and that's when joy is just the most important, is when we're engaging with the things that Jesus did and showing people that this is the best way to live life.
Beautiful.
I like that. I think the powerful, I think you see that. I appreciate the way joy is manifested here, like even just amongst our relationship, right? That, Brad and I on the two ends of this table are like, whoa, whoa, like the hype dudes, and Aaron is like composed, and but there's no less joy that Aaron has.
Yeah.
That is kind of the essence of that's good. Our life.
Yeah. There's not a picture of one kind of, yeah, you have to do this to be joyful.
And so if it is, like, if you're happy, you know it, show it.
Yeah.
Like, but don't show it like Dan shows it. Don't show it like Brad shows it. Don't show it like Aaron shows it. Yeah, no. Show it in a way that's authentic to you, but it should. Joy should manifest. It should be the manifested result of this relationship of intimacy that you have with God.
Yeah, I use the sports analogy sometimes. So my dad and I both love Xavier basketball. And when we're at a basketball game together, it's really funny to see the way that we respond to good things happening on the court. Like, we both love Xavier basketball. Like, we would appreciate if they won every game by 50, right? But when we're watching a game and something good's happening, I'll be up like high-fiving strangers next to me. I'm like saluting the guy in the back row, you know? And my dad is just like standing up, clapping and nodding his head, you know? And it's like, he is not like less appreciative of what's happening.
I like your dad,
Brad. But, yeah. but the thing that I want to get at though, is it does demand a response though. Yeah. Like it would be different if he was just keeping it all in, sat down, never stood up, applauded, never looked at me and said, wow, that was a good pass. Or wow, that, like, if it was all just kind of like stoic complacency, there is something, like, there's just something wrong with that. It, like, what's happening in me, like, if I'm body, mind, and soul, what's happening in me and the things I'm appreciating, they have to come out. And again, the different personalities are going to express that differently, but joy is not an option in the Christian life. Yeah. The way that it's manifest usually is dependent on how God's made us.
You know what is the opposite of joy?
What is that?
Criticism. So if I am motivated from a place of criticism, that's like the sure shot that you're going to miss this
thing. That's a good word.
So
that's a really good
word.
And
it's funny, you were mentioning from a place of liturgy, you know, we here at Damascus, we don't point ourselves toward like a traditional versus a contemporary expression of liturgy per se, right? Because why? We want our liturgy just to be an expression of what the church actually teaches and what the church actually believes, and to be given with the whole heart. But it's funny, whichever side of the aisle you end up directing yourselves toward, often liturgical conversations can come into this place of like, my primary goal here is criticism, or at least that's how it could be interpreted if you watch what I did and listen to what I said. And I can almost guarantee that if that's our motivation, it's just a recipe for a joyless existence.
Yeah, well, and it's actually going to be more fruitful if you're wanting to invite people into something that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know how you do that? By showing them, like being like, man, you have to come with me. I had a friend that did this, like, and I honor him for it. There's a traditional Latin mass that's celebrated in Columbus, and I go to St. Paul, which just has a contemporary expression of the mass. And when he was so excited, he's like, you've never been before. You should just come with me one Sunday. Like, and you can bring Nina too. And Nina was out of town. And I was like, actually this weekend, I don't have anything lined up. I'd love to go. And I went, and he was like, but what drew me in was like his just like love of sharing something he finds beautiful. Yeah. And it was so much more attractive than if he was like, hey, that church you usually go to, it's incredibly average, but I'll tell you this, the real, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it is just more fruitful. Cause even if your end is like, hey, I want people to see what I see in the beauty of this expression or that expression. I want people to see what I see when it comes to reverence. It's like the best way to bring someone into your world is to say, it's changed my life and I'm so excited to share it with you.
Beautiful. Well, when we love what, when we love what we know, that love motivates us toward action and mission. And we're going to step into mission momentum. How can we actually make sure that we're not only hearing this here on Saturday afternoon, but that we're living this throughout the course of our week? What's your mission momentum point for the day, man?
Oh, man. What is my mission momentum? I want to...
I got one if you're still struggling.
Yeah, I'm still struggling.
Okay.
Here we go. Wrestling into it.
Whether it's a religious topic and maybe bonus points if it is, or whether it's just any topic that intrigues you, that interests you, that excites you, I would encourage you this week to think of what that topic is and to find somebody who you can ask to share their perspective on it or to share what they know about it, to engage in a meaningful dialogue with somebody so that you can learn more intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend this way all the time, but I think the mission momentum I want to give is find a way to magnetize people that you don't usually choose. So here's what I mean by that. So like whenever I'm in a social situation, I tend to want to go to everybody in the room for 30 seconds. Okay, if that's your proclivity, go into a room and spend 20 minutes with one person, right? And like experience and like in a way, like allow yourself to be magnetic there in a way that you're not usually accustomed to, right? Mm-hmm. So, or maybe your tendency is whenever you go into a given place, like you have the right words to say to a cashier, but instead like smile, ask them how their day's going and listen. I think like what I'm getting at in my heart as we've been talking here is like, I think that when we can begin to see ourselves as representatives of Jesus in the world, and we can stretch ourselves outside of our comfort while doing that, we can bring more people to the truth of the gospel. So I'm thinking like, choose a way in your life to be a magnetic person, a joyful person, someone that people want to come to, but in a way that's different than what you would usually default into. And I would say, do that at the supermarket, do that at your place of work, do that within your family context, however that can look. But if it was me, I think, for me, I should just say, I'm going to try to like spend 10 minutes with one person instead of 30 seconds with everyone and try to find like, okay, how am I choosing joy in this part of it? And how am I still being magnetic and drawing that person deeper?
That's awesome. My mission momentum, I'm assuming if you listen to Beyond Damascus, you do enjoy your Catholic faith. And so you probably know some people who don't. There may be a person in your life, maybe a son, a daughter, a friend, who thinks the church is boring. And I would encourage you to enter into a conversation with them and just share with them why you're passionate about your faith. That if the faith is boring to them, but it's not boring to you, share with them what about the faith brought you alive. And that's called a testimony. And when you share your testimony with others, it brings something in. It brings something out of them. So I think just sharing our testimony with someone, but specifically, why does the faith give you joy? Why does the faith give you excitement? And invite them into that reality.
That's awesome. Thank you for joining us on Mission here at Beyond Damascus. Not just listening to the show, but actually actively engaging. Mm-hmm. We want to continue to answer questions that are meaningful and that help you to grow in your faith. Please, if you have questions, comment in our YouTube or on your podcast or whatever you're, however you're engaging with us socially. Contact us so that we can answer all of your questions in our next seasons. And if this episode has encouraged you or answered a question for you, please share it with somebody who you think might have a similar question or might benefit from it. Once again, thanks to the benefactor who's helping to support us here at Damascus. Subscribe to the show so we can empty his pocketbook.
And bring more kids to camp.
And bring more kids to mixed motivations. I don't even know who this is. If I did, I'd probably change my tune. It's a great joy to be with you every week. And we look forward to seeing you again next time. Remember, mission, as always.
Dang it. I was on it. I felt good about
it. Here at Beyond Damascus, we want to remind you that mission makes sense. We love you. We'll see you again next week. God bless.
That's the best.
Friends, thanks for listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. You can listen to the whole version of today's show by searching for Beyond Damascus on YouTube or your favorite podcast app.